My name is Brad Dowdy, and my favorite album is Slanted and Enchanted by Pavement.
So I don't think I'd ever heard of this. I don't know if I've ever heard of Pavement. When we originally spoke about this, I think you said to me, oh, if there's one song you'll know, it's X. Mm-hmm. But none of this jumped out at me at all as a song that I've... any song on this album that I could remember. Is that surprising to you?
That's not surprising, and I actually changed my mind on the one song you might have heard, and we might have to revisit that when we talk about it. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Number one, this album's almost as old as you, right? So it came out when you were a wee lad, but it has that staying power in this type of music. You know, this indie college rock that kind of took off in the early 90s. So there's a chance, you know, and the lead singer's still going, and Pavement's done a reunion tour and all that stuff. So there, I thought there was maybe a teeny tiny chance that you have heard of maybe one song on this album. But have you at least heard of Pavement or Stephen Malkmus before we started talking about this?
I've heard of Pavement.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen, what was his name?
Malkmus. He's the lead singer.
What other projects has he done?
So he's gone on to, Pavement lasted maybe 10 years. You know, pretty much all the 90s. And I think they broke up in 99. Then they reformed in 2010. But all that time after they broke up, he recorded as Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks.
That's not a good band name.
Well, his other band name, which was during Pavement, was the Silver Jews, which that's also not a good band name. So yeah. Pavement's pretty strong in the band name department. But after that, Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks is what he's still recording as. So he's still going strong in his solo career. He's one of those prolific songwriters that... the content never ceases to come out of his brain.
So how did this album first find its way into your life? Where were you when you first heard it? Like, what was going on in the world of Brad Dowdy?
So what made me pick this album, even though I've since said I have one album that I think is the best of all time, it's not this one.
What is that album?
It's In the Aeroplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of them?
I've heard of them. I've not listened to their music.
So that's what I consider my personal greatest album of all time. From the way it's put together, technical, the sound, the whole big picture. But this is an important album to me, and it's one of my favorites because I actually do remember the first time I heard the main song on this album is called Summer Babe. The first time I heard it, I almost remember like to the mile marker where I was at in my car on the radio. I was in Atlanta at the time, and in the early 90s, we obviously don't have all this internet music that we have now. And Atlanta had a wonderful college radio station named Album 88. It was Georgia State's radio station, 88.5. And back during that time frame, like college radio was the thing. That's where you heard all this new music. You didn't hear college radio was like the internet of music at the time, right? It wasn't playing top 40. It wasn't playing, you know, metal or whatever, you know, genres are on the traditional radio at the time, you know, your R&B channels, you know, your rock channels and your pop channels. It was at the end of the dial, and it was just students running the radio station. But that station did such a good job of curating the music. They became like nationally famous. Like all the up and coming artists, you know, wanted to get their songs played on Album 88. And at the time I had a Honda Accord hatchback. It was gray. And I was driving on 285 and I was right near Cumberland Mall. If anyone's in the area, you know exactly where I'm talking about. And I was going to work. And this song comes on and you hear this ch-ch-ch. Like over and over, like this little hi-hat that they played throughout this song from beginning to end, interspersed with the regular drums, and I couldn't figure it out. It's like, I'm not a musician, you know, I've never been, you know, musically inclined. and it like stuck in my head, this ch-ch-ch over and over again, ch-ch-ch, like all through the song. And I couldn't figure out how he's playing it with it while he's playing the drums at the same time. And it was almost one of those moments that like I didn't pull over, but it was like, I have to know who this was. And I was just like praying that they would say, I think I caught it like right after the song started, and I wasn't paying attention to who the singer was or who the band was. And luckily, you know, they recapped like the previous three songs that they played, and they said Pavement, Summer Babe. And I was like, you know, I got to write this down and remember it, and went and bought the album. At the time in Atlanta, you would buy CDs at a place called Turtles. So that was the local record shop. It was the CD shop. It was like a chain at the time. There was Coconut Records and Turtle Records and Tower Records, all in Atlanta at the time. You know, we don't have these things anymore. Like, I can't tell you.
They're all gone.
Yeah. The last CD I bought was probably at Best Buy, and it was probably well over 5 years ago. So like all these things are long gone, but you know, I was at Turtles, you know, once a week picking up, you know, new CDs. And I bought this CD, and just from front to back, it just kind of captured my imagination. Just like, this is a sound that was different to me at the time. It's like I missed, being the age that I was, I kind of missed a lot of the early 80s punk and, you know, that type of music that I caught up on later. Like, my favorite bands come from that time frame, but I wasn't around to listen to them at the time. Pavement was the first band that was in existence at the time where I like really latched onto them, and it opened my eyes to like a completely different world of music. Like, from that point on, like the next decade of music, I was like, that's where I really kind of, you know, expanded my horizons a lot.
So you've chosen this, I guess, as an album because it means something to you, not that it's necessarily the best music you've ever heard.
Yeah, I'd say that's right. Because anyone who listens to this for the first time, like you listen to this, you're probably like, what is this? Like, you could maybe see a little bit here and there in some of the songs, you know, that you might find enjoyable, but not really latch onto. It's important to me because, number one, it was great at the time. Number two, it's great today. Like, it's has not changed. It is still one of the greatest albums ever. And number three, it meant something to me at the time because my music horizons completely, I latched onto this scene, if you will, of this independent lo-fi college rock that was just kind of getting started at the time. I mean, there were precursors, like there were bands before like Husker Du and The Replacements and The Pixies, you know, all bands that I love that kind of came before this, but this is the first one that introduced, it was like at the start of a new scene, you know. It was like, if you know, whichever band started, you know, the Britpop scene, if you were there at the time, like Suede and Blur and Pulp, when they were just putting out their first albums, you know, in Teenage Fan Club, when they were putting out their first albums, it was like I was there for when this started, and this got me into other bands that are still some of my favorite bands to this day. Like, if I made ranked like the top, my top 10 bands of all time, probably five of them come from this era. You know, it's just, and it's still like, it's never been like the hugest popular scene. Like, Pavement never blew up like nationally or worldwide. They have fans everywhere. They could play anywhere tomorrow and sell it out. But not a stadium, right? You know, like a 2,000-seat venue. You know, they could come to London, they could sell something out. They're just not going to sell out Wembley, you know, things like that. But in all the bands I listened to, like Superchunk's another one that came from this era, and Guided by Voices, and these are all bands with the same type of sound, came from that same college scene, came from that same independent doing it yourself kind of way that I just really, really latched onto. And I've said it several times already, this is the music I still listen to now. Mm-hmm. Like, I listen to this album, you know, a lot, and I listen to all the bands from this era a lot. Like, I don't listen to many bands from like the 2000s and forward just because this stuff kind of sticks with me. And then, well, actually some of them still, all these bands I just mentioned all actually still play in some way, shape, or form. Either they're lead singers or the band as a whole has never broken up from this time frame. So yeah, it's just kind of one of those albums that started it all for me, if you will, as far as discovering what I really, really liked in music.
Do you want to know what I thought?
Yes, I do, actually, because we haven't talked about this at all. Like, I was a little bit worried. Not that it mattered necessarily, because it's, you know, it's okay, what album do I want to talk about? But I still, when you say something to someone, and you, there's also like a thing, well, are they going to like it? And yeah, I'm curious what you think.
What do you think I'm going to say?
I think you think it's okay, but you wouldn't really like listen to it as a normal, like it wouldn't be a thing for you. Like it wouldn't be, I'm going to listen to more. Like, it's like, I could put up with this kind of thing. And I see where Brad's coming from, but, you know, but not, you know, it's not going to be on repeat.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm close to your expectation. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't like it, but I can totally see why somebody would. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a very specific type of music. And there are some parts of it that I do like. There was a song called No Life Signed Her.
Yeah.
Which sounded a lot like a Sex Pistols track.
Yeah, it's a very... It's kind of a the rage kind of song.
Yeah, and I like that one. I think my favorite of what I heard was a song called, the names are insane, Trigger Cut / Wounded Kite at 17.
Yeah.
Was probably my favorite. It had a really nice rhythm to it. That I quite enjoyed.
Yep.
But overall, there are things that I really didn't like in this, which is the thing that I can't excuse, is I can't stand the vocals. Most of the time it sounds like the guy's singing out of tune, and I know it's a style,
mm-hmm.
but it's not my kind of style. And also lyrically, there isn't a lot to go on.
Yeah, so lyrically, he's not a storyteller.
There's a song called Conduit for Sale.
Yeah.
And Conduit for Sale just repeats the words I'm trying over and over and over again, and the rest of the words from the song are just spoken word. It's not you singing.
Yeah, that's like a spoken word screaming.
Yeah.
And then with I'm trying just being screamed like from beginning to end pretty much.
So I can feel in listening to it that is saying something to people, right?
Like, right.
But whatever it's saying, it's not saying it to me. And it might be that I wasn't around at the time that this was popular. So, like, mm-hmm. I maybe don't have the frame of reference as to why this, because I feel like there is a why for this music being created, which is more than just, I want to make some music.
So there's one song that's, I think, is the outlier here. And that's the song in retrospect, that I think you may have heard. And it's a song called Here, which is, it's essentially like a ballad, which kind of like cuts in between the screaming and the weird music and the strange lyrics. So this is a song I didn't like when I first started listening to the album, because it doesn't really fit to me with like the rest of it. It's way more normal, if you will. It's probably the most normal song on the album, and I remember I would just skip it back in the day. But it kind of grew on me. It's got some lyrics you can understand. There's some feeling behind it. And then it kind of, in the last decade or so, started popping up in movies and TV. It was like, it's like totally like a Michael Cera song. Like any movie or TV show he would be in, or Zach Braff, you know, this song would end up getting pulled into those shows. So that's the song I thought you might have heard, as opposed to Summer Babe in retrospect, because it's definitely the most normal song and it's kind of gotten the most play like in the last decade or so.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly what movies and shows it's been in, but it's definitely been used a bunch.
What other songs on this album do you like though?
My two favorites, I do like, the Trigger Cut that you mentioned earlier, but it's really, for me, it's Zurich is Stained. So what does it mean? I'm a stain. I just love the lyrics. But the thing about Stephen's lyrics is, like, I compare him to someone like David Gedge of The Wedding Present, who in a completely opposite fashion. Like, I'm a huge Wedding Present fan. They were probably, you know, one of my top choices for this show, picking one of their albums. But David Gedge writes meaningful, direct, heartfelt, emotional songs that you can relate to. Stephen Malkmus writes meaningful, emotional songs that you have no freaking clue what he is talking about, but at some point you kind of get, you know, they're very, I think they're both like excellent songwriters, but whereas David Gedge is straightforward, Stephen Malkmus is whatever the opposite of straightforward would be. It's like, it's almost crazy. Like he writes in a fashion that makes no sense, I think, except to him in the beginning. But this is almost like a love song. You know, it's very personal, it sounds like to me. I mean, he's got a line at the end, you know, hold me back or let me run. And, you know, you just kind of feel these things in this song that, you know, it's a little bit slower paced. As a matter of fact, it comes right out of the I'm Trying song, Conduit for Sale. Right after that, you get this very kind of ballady, Zurich is Stained. The other one is almost similar to this, to Zurich is Stained. They're almost the same song. That's called Loretta Scars. That's one where he repeats that a lot, Loretta Scars, over and over again. It's kind of got that emotion and that mood that you can tell there's like a story going on in his head about heartbreak and, you know, relationships in, you know, Summer Babe, which is the best song on the album, I think. It always has been and it always will be. It's the same way. You know, it's about love lost and, you know, these emotional things. And I've never been like a huge song lyric guy when they're not like spelled out for me. Like I was saying before, David Gedge spells out what's going on in the song and you can understand, okay, why he's heartbroken and, you know, who he's chasing after. Stephen Malkmus has the same result, but he's taking a very, very different path to get there, if you will. And that's what you see in Summer Babe and Zurich is Stained and Loretta Scars. I mean, those are the highlight songs for me.
So you mentioned, I think you referred to this as college rock.
Yeah.
What is college rock? And do you listen to other college rock albums and bands and music?
Yeah. So it was this scene that kind of came out of the late 80s and 90s where, you know, college radio stations started popping up. And at the time, that's when mainstream radio stations are pretty much owned by the record companies, right? You know, essentially pay-to-play mechanisms are in place to have certain songs played. And all this creative music was not getting played. So you would have these colleges would have the funds to set up their own recording studios and, you know, have the SEC approve them for certain antennas and wavelengths. And some of them would get like really popular. And in Album 88, what I referred to in the beginning, ended up being like 100,000 watt radio station with on the FM dial, which is equivalent to any mainstream radio station, but they had full control over their playlists, right? They had no pressure from any label to play any song. They had no relationships, really. And the students in the radio groups and who were studying that in school, you know, they would have their time running the radio station. And they would schedule the shows, schedule the playlist. You know, you could have a reggae show, you could have an old school rap show. And this is back in the days when you just don't hear those things on radio. And most of the time, they were getting into this new music with bands that were like coming up through local scenes that were playing local bars, playing local colleges. And then these college radio stations would end up sharing this music between each other. Like other college radio stations were following what, you know, the college radio stations in the East were following what the college radio stations in the West. I mean, and it even generated a magazine called CMJ, which was like the Bible at the time, which was a college music journal. And CMJ would collect what all these radio stations across the country were playing and make like lists so that you would have like the new music lists and, you know, what tracks are getting played the most by these college stations. And this is so off the radar from mainstream, like completely off the radar. But like I lived for the CMJ every month. Like I'd go to, I think, Tower Records and buy it. I never subscribed to it because it was really expensive, but I'd buy it every month and overpay for it. And a lot of times it came with a CD too. So you could hear all these bands like in this scene kind of coming out. At the time, I never bought so many CDs in my life going through this discovery period. Like I would hear a single and I would buy the CD, which is generally a bad idea. And a lot of times it was. A lot of times, okay, you know, that one's going to back to the record store. You know, we had the used record stores at the time, used CD stores where you could trade in and get credit and get, trade them in for other random one-off things. But I mean, there were so many small bands during that time that people have never heard of, that I still listen to. Like, I mean, Velocity Girl and Versus and gosh, I don't know. I've already mentioned like Superchunk. I still listen to this day and they still kind of go around. And, you know, this is when people like Liz Phair were starting to arrive, or Yo La Tengo were around. And, you know, this never bands that became the biggest superstars ever, but they were bands who made great music and really resonated with their fans. That's allowed them to live on, you know, even to this day. Sebado is another one. Like all of these bands kind of came in around the same time, just created this scene of do-it-yourself creativeness. You know, it wasn't the most technically strong music. It wasn't the most beautiful music, but it had this resonance with the age group they were going after, because you got to remember at this time, grunge is what's popular in like the early 90s. This is the Nirvana, Soundgarden era, and that's what's getting played in the mainstream. Well, there's always a subgenre that's equally as popular that no one wants to listen to the popular stuff, right? There's always going to be subgenres of music going on. You know, that's how punk came to be. And seeing these bands be able to get airtime on major college radio stations that are pumping out to lots and lots of listeners, and allowing these bands to have the careers, some of them decades long, and seeing them come out of this scene when there's not a lot of great music coming out is kind of cool.
So you mentioned earlier that kind of you're not so much of a lyrics person, and like you don't really look for the deepness in the lyrics. So you more just, do you find it more pleasurable to just have good music? And if so, what are the components of a song that you think is good music, like instrument wise?
It's hard to say, because I think about the songs that I really enjoy and they're very different musically. And I say I'm not a very much of a lyrics person, but I probably actually am, because I like, the number one thing that gets me to like a song is emotion. And that doesn't have to come from lyrics, right? That can come from music. It can come from, you know, the pacing and the sound, you know, of the guitars and the drums. You know, can you feel some, is there something in there you can feel different than just the superficial music as a whole? Is there something different about it that you can latch on to? In Pavement, a lot of it was more the music than the lyrics. I grasped onto the weirdness of the lyrics, and I grasped onto some of the repetitiveness of the lyrics, but I could feel the emotion and the lyrics in the slower songs. I could feel the rage in the lyrics in some of the more upbeat songs. And that's what sunk its teeth into me. All the songs that I listen to these days tend to be like super emotional songs, and not in the emo sense of things, right? But more in the, like it's really saying something deep, or the music is haunting, or the music is fast paced and it can pick me up, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I think that's the number one category I listen to would be emotional music, but that's specifically for me. Like what I get emotion out of from a song is different than what you get emotion out of from a song. You know, I listen to, you know, a song like Hurt, the Johnny Cash version, you know, which is it's an original Trent Reznor Nine Inch Nails song, which is good, but then Johnny Cash covered it. And it's one of the most emotional, painful songs ever, but I actually get uplifted by that, if that makes sense. Like, it makes me feel something. Like, it gets inside of me, and even though it's, wow, this is a really depressing song about death, it kind of gets me going, like, in a pumped-up kind of way. Not in a, like, woohoo kind of way, mm-hmm. but, like, I can feel the energy and emotion flowing through it.
Yeah.
And that's what I get out of a song. And, you know, Pavement's a different feel, and this album's a different feel than that. It doesn't have, you know, that level of detail, but the music and the lyrics and the strangeness of this album, you know, really set me off in a very, very positive way.
Have you ever had the chance to see any of this played live?
I have never have.
Is it something you wanted to do?
Absolutely. Like, it was hard at the time in Atlanta. Like, I went to a lot of concerts and shows back in the day, but it was just, I guess I just always missed Pavement. I never even saw them at, like, any of the festivals that would happen back in the 90s. So I've never seen Pavement live, which I would still go to this day. They still tour a little bit. They reunited in 2010, did a big tour, so I don't know if they'll do it again. And I would still go see them to this day, even though we're 25 years on from when this album was released, or more than that. I would still go see him, and I think the experience would be the same, because I don't think Stephen Malkmus has changed that much, other than he's gotten older. His musically, he's still pretty much the same.
Brad, are you proud of this album choice?
Oh, I'm super proud of this album choice. I love this album. I think it's an album that's hard to get into these days, right? This is not going to be like... this isn't going to be like in the starter kit of, hey, you should listen to this. But like, my kids are 10 and 8, and they've never listened to anything but my music. And, you know, I always play stuff like this in the background, even if they're not listening to it, or, you know, going, what is this noise? It's funny to see their reactions, because they eventually get into some of this kind of stuff. And you know, if one of these days, you know, my kid says, wow, I remember you playing that Pavement album, you know, 20 years from now. I remember those things from when I was a kid, when my parents used to play like cool music, and, you know, it makes an impression on me. And, you know, if I can make an impression on them in a unknowing kind of way, that's kind of a cool thing down the line, I think.